eating borscht with Jesus.
Fish head soup with God.
Hello.
A real life for a rap.
All right, it's the... You know what I'm astounded by constantly is how many people associated with this program speak Russian. It really is higher than I think.
There are a lot of them here.
Well, it's like Lisa Goddard speaks Russian. Diana from downtown speaks fluent Russian. And I don't think that's just a Northwest thing. I think there's some correlation between high IQ and then learning to speak sort of languages that are not traditionally the second language.
Hey, it's a difficult language because other letters are upside down and sideways. It's like, what is this?
It's like somebody dumped other alphabet out of a trash can on the ground. There you go. There's your letters. Jesus. Like a Z that's in some hat, like weird angle with a line through it. Hello. It's 503-733. Oh, I forgot to ask Lisa about this McCain thing. Damn me.
Maybe because we're too, you know, excited about listening to her engagement. In the romantic way her fiancé proposed.
I'm surprised that someone of her social standing would even question changing her last name.
It doesn't seem like it's a thing. Look, whatever. But, I mean, this seems like it's a thing from another time, don't you think? Mm-hmm. Like, with Laura and I, it wasn't even an issue. It's just, I mean, you know, she has a name.
She
I have a name.
You keep your last name.
That's what I'm saying. Well, you know, my brother took his wife's name. And I don't know if I mentioned
it on
the air.
I am all about that idea.
Really? So Nate would be like, Nate Dillon.
Yep.
That's a cool name.
I know.
But he'd have to be Nathaniel. That sounds like a bad
Nathaniel
name.
Dillon.
I am Nathaniel Dillon.
That is an awesome name.
Nate, you should do that anyway. Just do that now. That's a great name. Nathaniel Dillon.
Yeah, I've never wanted to change my last name.
And then you should wear cuffs and a powdered wig.
Oh, that'd be great, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird... But you're right. It's like the New York Times, you're saying that nobody...
No.
You don't ever see the
not a woman of substance, no.
No, because it didn't. I mean,
no. Actually, my friend. No, I have a friend who's works in a law firm, and then she took her husband's last name.
Did Delaine? Did Delaine do that?
Maybe no, Delaine's.
It could
space.
Be a better name.
Yeah, I mean, wait, Sporbert.
She's Delaine Lund Johnson, but no hyphen.
No, the hyphen is stupid.
I think she dropped her middle name, I think, and then made her last name, her middle name, then her husband's name, her last name.
Hyphens are a bit hippy-dippy.
No,
out there.
And the hyphen thing, I think, George Carlin's pretty, it's just, you know, pick a goddamn name. You know, just pick one or the other. But yeah, so my brother is, he is James Stevens, which rubbed whole sections of my family the wrong way, that he took his wife's name. It really is just emblematic of how much everybody in my family hates my dad, though. He was just like, my brother just kicking off the last vestiges of my dad's existence. So there you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Ministry of Truth with Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Wind and rain raise havoc throughout the Portland metro area, and even further than that, in Silverton, a woman and her son called police after a large tree crashed in their front yard. As they stood outside with the officers, another gust of wind knocked down another tree and hit the woman over the head.
Well, the wind wasn't, I mean, it was like, what, 50 miles an hour or something?
Yeah, it was gusty.
I thought it had to get up to like 75 before it started uprooting things, but apparently not.
No, she had to get 16 staples in her head.
Damn. It was doing that weird thing last night where the rain was going slantways. Mm-hmm. Like, I looked out and the rain was... Who bicycled today? Sarah?
I did.
Yeah, see, but there was no rain this morning, though.
No rain, but I brought my rain jacket.
Oh, it's gonna be bad.
I just ate, like, such crap this weekend. I could not go another day without riding my bike.
Oh, you don't even know. Oh, we'll talk to Clyde at the bottom
of
the
ride?
Hour. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
my bike's up front, yeah. No,
good.
But again, but man, I was just terrified that it was going to be like it was last night, where it's like, man, and the rain, it was like chubby rain last night. It was like big, heavy rain. It was like giving you a concussion and whatnot. All right.
ODOT closed down Highway 18 from US 101 at Otis to mile 31 just east of St. John.
If I was still on coin, that would have been a crazy traffic morning today.
Otis. 100 trees fell down. Exactly 100, apparently.
I wonder how Jenny Hogan's dealing with all this chaos and the anarchy out there.
So if you want to go to Otis, you have to go through Highway 22, which is in Hebo.
Hebo to Otis.
Which is, I have a picture of Hebo.
Oh, God.
Hebo has a population of 231, and they'll be glad to make a sandwich out there. It is 90% white.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm amazed. Hebo.
That's orange?
Mm-hmm. The median income there is $37,000.
What is the industry in Hebo, do you suppose?
Self-storage, I would imagine. Self-storage of bodies. There are 121 housing units there.
Housing units.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
The average household size is 2.46.
All right.
Most people are single.
Okay, there you go. Boy, this is even smaller than Otis.
Why not stop by in Hebo?
Why not come? Why not move your family to exciting Hebo?
The Hebo happy hour is now in progress.
If you lived in Hebo, you'd be home right now. All right.
There you go. Okay. Well, time for a Bush Watch.
Here's your Bush Watch for Monday.
He's the president in residence. He's kind of in charge. He's got the whole country staying. That's my Bush. Life is hard. That's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that say? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's on my own. That's my Bush.
Going on the Bush Watch today. First of all, the president's wax likeness is taking a thumping these days at Madame Tussauds Celebrity Waxworks in Vegas. Bush's head suffered about $25,000 in damages when a visitor attacked it the day before last week's election. No one pushed it over before, said the spokesman for the tourist attraction. Bush has needed repairs a number of times, mostly after having his nose pinched. This is the most damaged to one wax figure. People are always touching him, but this is indeed pretty rare. The president is calling for global isolation of Iran. He's told he's not in a position to call for anything right now. Meanwhile, he's getting ready to work with other people. He is not saying much about this meeting this morning, but a bipartisan group studying a possible change of course in Iraq. He had a private meeting with the Iraq Study Group, which is all...
an Iraq... I'm sorry. Why am I snorting so much today? An Iraq Study Group.
This is an Iraq Study Group. Shh, no talking. These are all the old President Bush's friends who have been brought in to try to save W from himself. A lot of old names that you heard before. The president held a private meeting with the study group. Quizzed by reporters, the president called it a really good discussion and said he would not prejudge the report.
I was pleased to meet with them. I was impressed by the quality of the of their membership. I was impressed by the questions they asked.
You know, you get this sense that the entire country is just, I mean, even the Republicans, even people who, for whatever reason, are big fans of this administration, do you get the feeling that everybody is just sort of done? They're just done. They're finished.
Yeah.
They're just waiting. It's like looking at the watch, like, is it 08 yet? Mm-hmm. They're washing their hands of it, and they're ready to move on. And, you know, it's got to be horrifying for the dad, too, for Bush 41.
Well, he's going to come in and clean this mess up.
Well, and what a strange world we're living in, that Bush 41 looks like a really smart, together, like, forward-thinking guy.
Uh-huh.
Which I never thought I would say. And again, this has nothing to do with the partisanship. He just seemed like, Bush 41 just seemed like a really out-of-touch dim bulb of a president when he was in office. And man, he just seems like a Mensa now. Did you see that creepy photograph of Bush and Clinton hugging it out?
Oh, yeah, that was
good. Oh, that's unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
That's like some weird... That's some stuff that your brain can't wrap itself around when you're seeing a picture of Bush and Clinton. And, man, Clinton is 60, Bush is 82, but, man, Bush the first, Bush 41, is still, man, he's still got the vim. Did you see the speech that he gave over the weekend, Bush 41, when he was there with Clinton?
Oh.
Man, what is it with guys? I look forward to being old because any social constraints you once had, they're just gone because you don't have to worry about... It's like how Bob Dole became really funny once he was no longer in office, once he was no longer running. Then he was just talking about, like, I take pills for my wiener, you know, and just talking, I'm going to go home and make love to Elizabeth Dole. Bob Dole's going to do that right now. Wah, wah, wah. And then he would, like, juggle and jump around. And just all of a sudden, he never did when he was running for anything. Bush 41, I don't have the sound from this, but he was telling the greatest story. That you don't ever think... There's certain guys you don't think they can be funny, like Al Gore. Bush 41 is telling this great story. He made fun of the fact that he threw up on the was it the emperor? President?
Yeah, the emperor of Japan.
The emperor of Japan? Sarah probably doesn't remember that.
Fish.
You don't remember when George Bush, our president, George Bush the first, Bush 41, when he threw up on the president of the emperor of Japan?
I do. I remember hearing about it after, but...
Oh.
He had gone over there to lecture them to buy more American cars, which are illegal there because of the emissions problems.
because the Japanese don't want to... They only want to kill whales, not humans. So they didn't want to buy our cars. And Bush was over there, well, I just like to... right on the emperor. And then the emperor, and there's just...
Fortunately, there wasn't a close-up of his lap.
And they're so grateful. It's a lot of, oh, terrible mess. You know, it's like, they're just so, the guy was just so smooth about it. But, I mean, you don't expect the president to vomit on you. You just don't. That's not one of those, I'm amazed that it wasn't just every news story. I'm surprised that they're still not leading news stories with that. You know, top of the hour news, 2006, don't forget, Bush 41 once vomited on a guy. And then they just got him throwing up, but he made fun of that. He's like, well, people don't forget you vomiting on the emperor. And then he had this one other great line, Bush 41 did, the kind of stuff that he would never have said when he was in office, where he said, well, I remember once, and I'm doing a bad Bush 41 voice, but he's like, well, I remember once when I was in Berkeley, and there was it was like some abortion rights group, and he's like, this is what he said, I swear to God, he goes, and it was led by the fattest, ugliest woman I'd ever seen in my life, and she was carrying a sign that said,
stay out of my womb. And I thought, lady, no problem. It's like, what? Like, Bush would never have said that when he was in office. And then Clinton rightly pointed out, Clinton's like, that's the kind of joke I could never tell. And I mean, those guys had like a Hope Crosby thing going on. Yeah. It was really brilliant.
It's their roadshow.
Yeah. I'd see that, wouldn't you?
Uh-huh.
Just Bush 41 and Clinton, just together again, just on the road.
At the Schnitzer Auditorium.
I was going to say that
we can sponsor it.
Then, we got to talk about that. That's coming up, too. Yeah. Anyway, all right.
The president was asked about Democrats taking over Congress and what that could mean in Iraq.
And what's interesting is that they're
beginning to understand
that with victory comes responsibilities, and I'm looking forward to working with the Democrats to achieve common objectives.
But what victory is this?
They're not saying, but he's trying to confuse it.
All right.
Well, Karl Rove is not in today.
That photograph is so great. The photograph of Karl Rove checking his BlackBerry as, like, the message to him, you lose. You know, just cause his expression is just sort of a dumb, like, Augustus Gloop-like befuddlement. Just sort of a, what? Ah, you know, just small, beady, pig-like eyes recessed all back in his fat face. Yeah.
John McCain has asked what group this Iraq study group can be.
Their views and conclusions will be carefully studied, but frankly, I still don't think there's a lot of good options.
Well, McCain has just become all jerky lately. Remember when that guy was...
kind of a moderate. Now he's moving further to the right because he thinks that's where the votes are.
Stop it. I got into a big argument, not a big argument, but an argument with a guy last night about this who thinks that it's all about McCain in 08 and that... Not going to work, man.
Nope.
There was a time when he would have had maybe a shot at people like us because he seemed all independent. Those days are gone.
Meanwhile, Howard Dean argued for a change in America's policy with Iraq.
We got to cut our losses and figure out how we're going to get our folks out and still defend the United States of America. Keeping 140,000 brave Americans in Iraq is not making America safer. It's very clear that it's not made America safer.
But keeping us, I really don't, and I know that 9/11, I know. But I don't understand exactly who we're keeping America safe from at this point. Seeing as how there was no... Doesn't really seem like there's anybody in Iraq. People in Iraq don't have anything. They have nothing.
No.
I used to joke about them living in cardboard boxes. They don't even have cardboard boxes. No. They don't have shoes. They have nothing.
No. Meanwhile, Howard Dean talked about the responsibility of Democrats having made significant gains in the midterm elections.
We have an opportunity now to show that we're tough on defense, that we're tough on balancing the budget, that we're going to be sensible, that we do want a commitment to a social safety net and economic justice, but we're going to use... we're going to be careful and thoughtful and do this in a sustainable way.
Oh, you know, the very worst part about this, of course, is how it affects me and my life. And I have to go to, what is it? Is it today the 13th? So like 2 weeks, I got to go to Provo, Utah. That'll be fun. So I got to be in Provo, Utah over, the weekend after Thanksgiving. So I'm going to sit there in a tiny little, and God love, you know, my in-laws, they're, you know, they're decent people and all. They're good God-fearing stock and so forth. But first of all, like all old people, they keep the house at like 150 degrees all the time. I don't know what it is about that. Why? I mean, I know that, is it just that, like, what is it? What? Let me ask you this. Why do old people always have to have it so goddamn hot? There's got to be a medical explanation for that. Somebody tell me now. That's the thing, that there needs to be a scientific... Why are you spending our money to investigate cow flatulence and so forth? Why do we really ought to investigate why old people always have to have it so... And don't tell me it's poor circulation. That's a non-answer. That's something that people say because they've heard someone else say it. It doesn't make any sense. You don't even know what it means. So don't call up and say it's poor circulation. Old people, the temperature can never be hot enough for them. And especially... And it's always in the house of somebody you don't want to be spending time with. You ever do this? Go to visit maybe older relatives that you're not crazy about staying with. You walk inside, and it's just smothering. It's like being inside a coffin for 5 days. That's what staying in the house is like. No offense, honey. You know I love you. But you're staying with your family in Provo is like being in a coffin. A coffin with a parakeet. That's what it's like. And man, in that house, it's nonstop Fox News Channel in that house. It's constantly, constantly on. No TiVo, no way to stop it, no way to slow it down. Just a long, droning, big, square-headed Sean Hannity going on and on and on and on for hours. All right. Well, anyway.
On to me we go, because we want to talk to Joe Lieberman and find out what he's up to today.
Fantastic.
Joe says voters did give the president a big message last week.
This was not a major realignment election, in my opinion. This was the voters in Connecticut and elsewhere saying... We're disappointed with the Republicans. We want to give the Democrats a chance.
You know, the thing about Joe Lieberman, how weird he's suddenly become a spokesperson. He's a pundit.
Yeah.
He's a senior fellow now.
He was ruled out a couple of weeks ago. Now he's back.
All right.
Don't mention.
All right.
Nancy Pelosi says it's time for a fresh start with the president.
The campaign is over. Democrats are ready to lead, prepared to govern, and absolutely willing to work in a bipartisan way and partnership, not partisanship, with the Republicans in the Congress and with the President of the United States.
That's the creation of a new catchphrase.
Mm. From the devil's island of San Francisco.
Fantastic.
Today's the last day to send packages to troops stationed in Afghanistan and Iraq, says the Pentagon's Major Upton.
Now, if you're mailing letters or cards that are being sent by first-class mail to American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, those should be mailed by December 4th in order to arrive in time for the holidays.
I don't understand. Oh, for Christmas.
Christmas,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, for a minute, I thought that they were leaving.
No.
No, that's never going to
They're
going to
be there through Christmas.
They'll be there forever. Mm-hmm. All right.
Meanwhile, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip is getting the go-ahead for a full season on the Pumpkin Network. Make that the Peacock Network, excuse me. Matthew Perry of Bradley Whitfield and Amanda Peet star in this. It takes place of the goings-on behind the scenes of the long-running sketch comedy similar to SNL. Alumnist Will Ferrell of SNL says he enjoys watching Studio 60 for a number of reasons.
Incredibly accurate. Incredibly. No. I think I love watching it for all the wrong reasons. it's kind of amazing. Their interpretation.
This is a really gripping soundbite.
It's neat because I like listening to that because you can hear that he's holding back because he's basically saying, yeah, everyone who I work with are asses, and see this is exactly what happened.
Oh, that's exactly what he's thinking.
I wish he would just say that, though. I wish he would just be like, they're all bastards.
No, see, that's smart, though. He's got to watch his back, at least for now.
I suppose. That's the frustrating thing about SNL is that Jay Moore book aside, which is really more like a pamphlet, if you read Gasping for Airtime, which is like, really, it's like... That Jay, you guys read that, the Jay Moore book?
No.
Boy, man, thank God for the library. When I was unemployed, I do this every time I'm unemployed. A, for reasons of thrift, because I'm a skinflint. And B, just because, you know, you can get more books. I become a reading maniac whenever I'm unemployed. That's the only time I get to read. Because I love to read, but I just don't have the time. But I always go through a huge stack of books every time I'm unemployed. I read this Jay Moore book last time called Gasping for Airtime. It's like $35 if you want to buy it. And literally, it's like 6 inches high and about 4 inches wide and about 90 pages long. And it's... I mean, and it could have been such a great idea because there had never been a book except for this one, which is more about him having, he had like panic disorder or whatever, and he went crazy and blah, blah, blah. But there's never been a book about SNL written by anybody who's there, ever. No one from, it's all the books about SNL are always written by people who were never there. And so that's the frustrating thing about it is there's never been a tell-all book about
SNL.
Maybe
Lorne Michaels has him sign some, you know that he does. He probably has some agreement signed where they can't say anything.
Probably like, it's like MTV. Mm-hmm. I've always said there's never been a tell-all book about MTV. So, I mean, I like Will Ferrell. I guess it's good that he's not being a jerk about it. But, boy, you just want him to name. I wonder what it's like, though, to work at SNL and to have that show. A show on your own network that's just savaging you, just kicking you in the teeth just every week. Well, I'm glad that show has been extended for a whole season because now I can go back and watch it. Because Sarah and I talked about my...
I watched the first three episodes, have not watched one since.
That's what happened to me, too. I didn't want to invest my time in a sinking ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. So it probably won't get renewed for a second season. But at least we can watch this season. And knowing Sorkin, they probably haven't even filmed the rest of the episodes for this season. Because he never, ever, ever gets anything done on time. So if he feels like they're not going to get renewed for a second season, he may actually make the season finale the series finale as well, which is what they did with Freaks and Geeks.
Will, please tell us what success feels like.
I think you go through real periods of feeling really confident, and then you go right back to feeling like you're terrible, and boy, I better think of another job, because this could fall to pieces at any moment, you know. So it's a weird mixture of, like, supreme confidence, and then, like, just have moments and times where you're like, ah.
That's that.
Okay, so there you go. All right. Should we break, sir?
Yes.
All right, we got Clyde, the hungover, Clyde Lewis.
And later, Barrett is spanked by an angry Yank, according to the Sun.
All right, we got the both have Borat news, Great Britney news.
Yes.
What else? Guns N' Roses news.
Burger King manager shoots some teenagers.
Oh, and they were, I heard they were asking
they
for
were
it,
asking
They
for
were
it.
Totally asking for it.
They wanted it more than their way.
King it my way! Genius. Blah, blah, blah. You say that's the Rick Emerson Show, it's a business. I'm
say preemptively?
I got it in time.
All right. Why is this one so louder than the other? So much louder. Why is this so louder? Me no talk pretty today. The thing is, I can't have any more coffee right now. I gotta wait till 1 o'clock. If I do it now, I'll be edgy then. 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson radio program.
Thank you for coming by.
Let me read this really quickly. So I said I had Guns N' Roses news. From last Thursday. Guns N' Roses canceled a performance in Portland, Maine this week after being told by state officials the band could not drink on stage. What kind of a town is Portland, Maine, where you can't drink on stage? It's like that thing. Somebody told me that you couldn't smoke on stage in Portland. I don't know if that's true or not. Inspectors from the state fire marshal's office gave the band the no-drinking order. What? Seriously, who enforces a no-drinking order when it comes to rock bands on stage? What kind of sissy state are you? When they came to look over the pyrotechnics, I see. So you can actually set a fire inside a closed area, but you can't have booze. For Monday's scheduled concert, blah, blah, blah. The band wanted to drink beer, wine, and Jägermeister while performing. A couple hours after being told that would violate state law, Guns N' Roses canceled its concert, he said. After the cancellation, a band spokesperson blamed fire marshals for making it impossible, blah, blah, blah. Band leader Axl Rose issued a statement through the Guns N' Roses website apologizing to fans, and so forth. What else? And blah, blah, blah. Well, there you go.
We've got to get to Clyde because I want to hear this story.
All right, I'm just throwing this away, so it's up.
There you go. So here's your Guns N' Roses.
Axl kind of asked to cancel 1 and 3, though, to keep his cred. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. The official Scary Harry guy, host of the Ground Zero Lounge tonight at Dante's. Clyde Lewis. Hello, sir.
You got me in the tortilla chip.
I'm sorry?
I'm in the middle of eating a tortilla chip.
What do you mean? Okay.
Mouthful of tortilla chip and dip.
All right. Which, are you at work?
No, I'm not.
Why not, Clyde?
I'm at lunch.
Oh, I see. So you did go to work today.
Yeah, I went to work today, yeah.
Okay.
I
mean,
yeah, Rick said...
I know we ate a lot of spaghetti yesterday, but I was able to roll out of bed at work. I was full of spaghetti.
You do sound a little blurred around
I didn't think the problem was the spaghetti so much. It was the bottles of wine. It
wasn't so much bottles of wine.
Yes, we drank a lot of wine. We ate
like
spaghetti.
A bottle, but square.
Oh, boxes.
Boxes.
Well, we had them in carafes, and we drank a lot of wine.
Okay,
and
you're...
also ate a lot of spaghetti, and Rick and I were just like out eating each other, which I thought was kind of funny.
You do sound you have a little post-intoxication fuzziness to you today, Clyde.
No, I'm kind of weird. My stomach feels kind of weird today after all that spaghetti.
Yeah, here's the thing. So I didn't get a chance to talk about this early on. The composition of the show is sort of different than the composition last night, because here the show, except for Scotty, I mean, Sarah and Tim and myself all grew up Catholic, all attended Catholic school, or religious school at least, to a certain degree. Last night, but see, my wife, though, like Clyde, my wife, Laura, grew up Mormon. And so, Laura, just like I sort of have, not a fixation, but I mean, certainly when I lived in Utah and for a while afterward, I had a real interest and a real kind of fixation on all things Mormon. I wanted to learn, she took me to a couple of Mormon church services and whatever. Laura has this weird fixation on all things Catholic. And right. There is nothing more Catholic than, wait for it, a spaghetti feed.
Yes.
And so we were driving down Division a couple weeks ago, and there's this church. I forget what it is. It's like St. Paul. I took a photograph of the menu. I don't know where it is. I'll post it. But we were driving down Division a couple weeks ago, and it's like...
Recently, it was the 6th annual spaghetti feed. Did you see that?
63rd annual. 63rd, yeah.
And I drove by that.
We went. We were there.
Well, we were there at the big feed.
What made you... What possessed you to
go
there?
Laura. Laura has this weird fixation on the Catholic religion. She finds it really interesting because I'm Catholic, but of course she had no exposure to it growing up Mormon. And so she finds Catholic rituals and traditions, because it's not a ritual, but it is a real... It is a tradition. Boy, it's like bingo. It's so much a tradition that it borders on cliche. And so she's really fascinated by that stuff. And so a couple weeks ago, we're driving by that church, whatever it is, St. Paul or whatever it is. We're driving by that church. She's like, sick. And she's heard me for years joke about, Catholics, and they always have these huge spaghetti feeds in a gymnasium. They go on for like 10 hours. We're driving by the church a couple weeks ago. She's like, a spaghetti feed. We're going. And I'm like, what? Okay. And I just sort of wrote it off. I'm like, okay, yeah, spaghetti feed, whatever. Last weekend, we're over at Aaron Geek in the City's house. We're having dinner with Aaron and Jen's sister, Laura. My wife, and this is a Laura thing, but Laura, my wife, brings up the, hey, Rick and I are going to the spaghetti feed next week at the church. Jen's sister Laura pipes up and goes, me too, it's already in my day planner, which is bizarre because none of us are religious. None of us are active Catholics. None of us are religious. None of us go to services. None of us engage in an organized religion at all at any point in their lives. But Laura and Laura had both put it down like must do, must go to spaghetti feed. And so then, of course, it becomes Jen and Aaron. And then at the end, then it became Clyde, too. So last night, we all just go to the spaghetti feed last night at the church. We stand in the rain for like 40 minutes. And last night, I said it was like chubby rain last night. It's like full-on heavy rain.
Heavy rain, saturated rain last night.
We're standing outside 40 minutes in the rain to get inside. And then you have, it's like $10 a throw. So we get in there like $10 a head. But this is how you know, by the way, that the Catholic religion is superior to all others. This is a lapsed Catholic that I am. This is how you know the Catholic Church is better than whatever your religion is. Because we get inside, and I'm with Clyde and Laura, neither of whom were Catholic. Both of them grew up Mormon. We get inside, and you can see inside where the spaghetti feed is happening. And there's a huge sign on your left as you walk into this church. And it says in big letters, a meal without wine is like a day without sunshine.
And it's, I'll always remember that, too.
Totally.
A meal without wine is like a day without sunshine.
And if you know, and I mean, and the Mormon faith, you know, there's no drinking, no smoking, no nothing.
That is so, I would go to more of the spaghetti dinners. I didn't know you got free wine.
Well, it's not free. I mean, but it's like, it's pretty cheap because it's in the box. And we go in, and literally, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of empty Franzia boxes that have been gone through and just tossed in the corner. I mean, and so it was like $10. And so $10 gets you the, of course, white bread, big bowl of white bread in the middle of the table. And then like kind of a salad. And then just all the spaghetti you could possibly eat.
And wine?
And, well, none of the wine. See, the
yeah,
wine you got to pay
for. That much wine, but we had a lot of spaghetti.
The wine, but well, wine is cheap. It was like $6 and you got like a big carafe.
Oh, that is.
Like a Cabernet or whatever.
We had like 10 coffee carafes sitting at the table too.
Yeah, and then like endless coffee refills, whatever. And
cake.
And I got to tell you, man, that spaghetti was pretty hearty.
That was good.
It was not tremendously spicy. I should have brought my own spice. But so there's Lara and Clyde and me and the, like the you know just the, you know the whole geek squad, and we're there. And again, it's like and there's only like two of us or three of us there that have any Catholic, and we're not even active Catholics anymore. The rest of everybody else at the table is like an atheist or agnostic or a pagan or something, and yet we're all just there just having the eating. And Clyde, how many plates of spaghetti did you put down? Four.
Four.
Oh. I mean, and these are
put down four.
These are four big-ass plates of Catholic spaghetti with huge meatballs. I mean, meatballs like the size of your fist.
Rick and I decided we were just going to have it all. So
And then it was all-you-can-eat cake afterward.
All the cake we could eat.
That was afterward. Yeah, afterwards it was like all-you-can-eat cake and coffee.
It was amazing.
I mean, it was, I can't even, I put down three plates of spaghetti. Clyde put down four. And then Clyde, of course, is with the wine and the, you know. And then, of course, as everybody gets drunker. So there we are. This is a totally true story. So there we are last night, surrounded by hundreds of other Catholics. The average age is about 60. Everybody there, and we're all, you know, younger than that, but everybody's like putting down the spaghetti and the wine. As everybody gets more and more drunk, they're saying things more and more loudly that they really shouldn't be saying.
And we were on a stage, too.
Like, what's his name? That Aaron guy, Aaron Prime, at one point is... No. It was Lars von Trapp. At one point, he's just like, well, Jesus Christ, when is blah, blah, blah? You know, we're all like, no, ixnay. And then I said the... See, now I don't even want to say it in context of the church, or I said the GD word at one point. That was awkward. Because I'm all, well, you know, and I'm the S word,
which really wasn't.
No, and then, do you remember? And then here's the other thing. We were talking about this. And so as everybody's getting progressively drunker at the Catholic spaghetti feed last night, which you really ought to go to the next one. It really
I
is.
Will.
I see, I didn't, God love Laura, I didn't think it was going to be. Because I thought it was going to be one of those things where, like, she thought it was really funny
and
interesting.
They just served, like, the watered-down orange drink and sugar cookies.
Totally.
Exactly,
yeah.
That's what I remember those dinners being like.
Well, and Laura was like, no, it's really fascinating. I want to know how you grew up. This whole spaghetti feed thing really fascinates me. And I'm like, all right, fine, we'll go. And I thought it was just going to be a whole lot of nothing. But it ended up being pretty great, largely because everybody was drunk and the spaghetti was all you can eat. But then Jen, Aaron's wife Jen... Oh, this is okay, Aaron. Jen gets really... Because at one point there was a priest walking by. And Laura leans over and whispers really loudly, is that a gay priest? And I'm like, what are you talking? And I'm like, honey, what are you doing? And she goes, well, he just seems, you know, that way. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, well, his mannerisms. And I said, well, it doesn't, you know, I don't know, but why don't you just eat your spaghetti, honey? And have some more wine and be quiet. And then right at that moment, like clockwork, Jen, Aaron's wife, says really loudly, you know, I kissed a priest one time, and it was good. And
It was just, it was like a Fellini film. Like everything was just coming apart around me. And then, and finally, oh, and then I, and then I won something in the church raffle. So that was exciting.
Yeah, you won some walkie-talkies.
I won a child's, I won a set of, a toy set of a child's walkie-talkies.
Did you see when we were in line, I was trying to charm my way to the front of the line with all the old ladies?
Oh, and Clyde, that's the other thing. Clyde is totally working the old ladies, too, because we're standing outside in the rain, and we're handing back the raffle, and Clyde is totally turning on the charm for the blue-haired 65-year-old ladies that have that one. They have the 65-year-old lady hairdo, all of them. And Clyde starts chatting up the old ladies, which is alternately funny and creepy. And Clyde's like, so, Bob Barker's retiring. Clyde knows the way to an old woman's heart. Clyde's like, you know, Bob Barker's retiring. And they're like, I know, it's so, who can, how will the show go on? Who can replace Bob Barker? Clyde's like, ma'am, no one can replace Bob Barker. And this is what Clyde says, I swear to God. One of the 65-year-old women who are sitting there tearing raffle tickets is talking to Clyde about Wheel of Fortune. And she says, oh, I'm a huge Bob Barker fan. And Clyde goes, well, you're like one of Barker's beauties, aren't you? And it was all
oh.
very... And it was hilarious, but kind of like...
I really
oh,
said that, too.
You did. It was like all creepy at the same time. And
then I said, who's going to tell me who to spay and neuter?
Oh, God. Yeah, it was a really weird night. It was
fun. I call it my church charm, I told Laura. Church charm.
It was very, very bizarre. Anyway, so you're not hungover.
No, I'm not hungover at all.
It was like hundreds of boxes of frenzy wine, though.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's up in your world?
Well, I went to a cemetery on Saturday night.
Okay.
Did an investigation because I'm going to talk about the linking of the earthquake that happened a week ago and the fact that the longitude and latitude of the place is near the cemetery, which I thought was interesting.
Okay.
So we went and we did a discovery there. We got some pictures and a strange story about a black cat that I'm going to share with everybody at Dante's tonight, which is really kind of...
Oh, I know the story. I won't give it away, but you told the story last night about the black cat. It was pretty creepy.
Yeah, it's a creepy story, and so it's got me kind of worried about a lot of things. But in the meantime, we got pictures, we got stuff to talk about, we got all kinds of things at Dante's tonight. And then on Saturday, actually Friday and Saturday, Aaron Duran, Scotty, and myself are going to be all at Oricon. We're going to be...
And that's a convention. Is that like a sci-fi convention?
Sci-fi convention at the Marriott Hotel.
And you guys are speaking, right?
Yeah, we're speaking there. We're going to be holding panels and speaking there, so that'll be a lot of fun, too.
Excellent.
We want everybody to come out and support us there. We're going to be... in fact, Aaron and I are going to get the beat down on whether or not heroes, whether or not we want to have all these wonderful, bright heroes, or we're rooting for the villains. And I'm going to take the side that we're rooting for the villains.
Well, because we were talking about the Spider-Man 3 trailer last night, which has Venom... And so forth. And we're talking about whether people are more into heroes or anti-heroes at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So that's cool. Going to be our little debate. And then, of course, I'm going to be at a few other panels, stuff about fan films and other things. So if you're a big sci-fi person and you want to come to Oricon, I'll be there, actually Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I don't know if you're going to be there too much on Friday. But Saturday and Sunday, I'm going to be there hosting some panels.
Now, really, and I just mean this as a journalistic observation, you really do still sound drunk.
I do sound drunk?
Yes, Sarah?
You sound a little slurry, my friend.
I do. Well, that's bizarre, because I'm not.
I can't even imagine how many thousands of calories we consume.
I'm just eating a tuna melt and having some chips.
I'm just saying.
I was just told by an inside source, Rick, that you had 3.5 bowls of spaghetti.
I did.
And two slices of cake.
You had four. Don't.
I did not. I had three. I had three, and then someone else's meatball.
I had four.
I had three. I had someone else's meatball, which is the size of a fist. And then I had several...
Good thing you rode your bike today.
Yeah, good thing you did.
Sarah's making
I would want to diet, too.
Sarah's making the Stay Puft face at me.
Yeah.
I totally brought the bike in. It's several pieces of cake, and then, I did not have wine, but thank God, because I just would have exploded. So, all right.
So see you tonight at Dante's at 8 o'clock, and hopefully I'll be well-recovered. I'm just feeling kind of out of it because of all the spaghetti and wine I drank last night. So.
Okay. Thank you, Clyde anyway. Lewis, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Thank you, sir. All right. Clyde Lewis. Fantastic. There you go. There's a good time for everybody. All right. Well,
we have a guest out in the hall.
Do we?
Mm-hmm.
Is he from Kazakhstan?
I don't know. Maybe you should look.
Hey, Davey Meeples.
Meeples.
What's up, man? How are you doing? Let's welcome. Do we have something to, wait, hold on. Let me.
You just played the breastfeeding sounder.
Oh, yeah.
You.
Thank you. And then we'll welcome here in a few. We're getting. Wait, hold on with this. And there we go. And we'll welcome here in a few. We're getting so behind, but we'll have Tim Riley back, and we'll extend the news hour in a while, because now we've gotten totally off track with Clyde and the spaghetti and the nipples and the so forth.
Not saying that Davey is a big fan of the breast milk.
Davey.
Did I ever hear an explanation on what all that mechanical sound is in that thunder?
I don't understand it. It's something that happens in Scotty J's head, and I don't ask. I just sort of...
I don't think I'll ask either.
You're suckling off a fembot, I guess. All right. It's the belch at the end that really... Because it's so obviously an adult belch. All right. Well, see, okay, now, so let's just get a handle on this right now. So we'll talk to Dave before we'll do a break. We'll come back. We'll extend the news hour into the 1 o'clock hour because we're getting all behind here and so forth. Shut your head. Bastard. So what's up with you? Well, you were at Paul Stanley on Saturday.
I was. I didn't stay for the whole show, did you?
Yeah, you didn't stay? What kind of fan are you? Were you there for the house band?
I had my 9-year-old son with me.
Oh, that's pretty cool, though.
Oh, yeah. He's like, well, I've never been to a real concert like this before.
Was he there when Paul was reading the love poetry from the audience?
Unfortunately,
God.
I was trying to distract him, but he was like, wait, I want to hear what he's saying.
Yeah, when she was talking about, how do I put this? There was, okay, let's just jump into it. So that Paul Stanley played at the Aladdin on Saturday, and I got to tell you, you know me, I'm a huge Kiss fan.
I know this.
Paul is my favorite member of Kiss. Paul, everything, anybody who saw Bigger Than Jesus knows that I rip off about half my delivery from that guy.
Star Child.
you're looking for someone, but it's not Kiss. These are our magic talismans. We're just ordinary mortals without them. Oh, I can't believe I just did that. Anyway, but I'm a huge Paul Stanley fan, and but here's the thing: is I bought my ticket because people always think that we have the hookup with everything. We
I was
really
say
don't.
You had to buy it.
I don't. Look, Mr.
Large.
I was going to say Mr. Sweaty Nipples Portland Legend guy. It's not all of us. We're not all Portland rock icons, Davey Nipples.
You're on your way.
Well, I'm just saying. So I don't always have... People always think we have the hookup, and we really ever don't. So I bought a ticket. And it was... I mean, not... That was like $35 or whatever, but I mean, it's about what you're going to pay. He's a living legend. But even by like... by Saturday night, I was just sort of like... I was just feeling kind of tired and worn out, and I was just like, man, screw it. How many times do I need to hear rock and roll all night? What's the point? And I was actually getting ready to not go. I was getting ready to just bail on it. And then, you know, and also, here's the other thing. I had also bought the ticket for Paul Stanley thinking that I was going to be able to interview him on Friday.
Right.
And then that ended up not happening. As nobody, you know, Storm was very gracious trying to hook us up. But then I got the, you know, Paul is saving his voice. With translation is, the show is sold out, so he doesn't need the help from your radio station. But thank you. He doesn't need to shill.
He had a root canal, too.
Thanks. Oh, and he had a root canal the day before, which I didn't know. Anyway, but like finally, I'm just like, well... Screw it, the house band is going to be there. I'm a big fan of those guys. And, well, it is Paul Stanley and all. So I kind of had some coffee and went to the show. And, God damn it was fantastic.
It was fun.
And not just in an I'm really old, clinging to my faded youth, let me wallow in some nostalgia kind of way. Because he didn't play rock and roll all night. He didn't even mention the word Kiss. He never used the word Kiss.
Not once.
He played one or two really big hits, like Strutter. And Love Gun.
Yeah, those are the only two.
But he just played a bunch of stuff that you never hear, and I'm not going to go on and on about it because it was kind of a niche interest. But, I mean, he was really relaxed. And here's the thing about Paul Stanley is that, and I will say as a preface, I have never, ever heard him complain about stardom once. In fact, quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. He always says, like, I'm the luckiest guy on earth. And if you don't want to be famous, give me your money and fame because I'll take it. He's never, ever complained about fame, ever. But by the same token, you know that Paul Stanley, here's something you don't hear every day. Paul Stanley is like William Shatner in that the persona that made him famous is sort of, he is defined by that. And you got to know that he looks for any chance to sort of exist outside. That's why he did Phantom of the Opera.
Right.
But he was not in his Star Child mode last night. You know, he wasn't in his, the only evidence of the Paul Stanley persona on Saturday was when he would go, Portland! You know, and he would, and start every sentence with, people!
Yeah.
That's it. But he was really laid back. At one point, a woman in the audience offered him $5 to play Hotter Than Hell. And so he walked over to her with the guitar and played Hotter Than Hell, just himself with the guitar, and then took her $5.
Oh, nice.
You were there?
I missed that.
A woman is waving $5 in the front row, and she's like, play Hotter Than Hell! And so he walks over, and he's like, all right, but just to shut you up. And then he just stands right in front of her with the guitar, plays Hotter Than Hell just on the guitar. And then she goes, woo, and puts the money away. And he's like, no, give me the $5. And he leans down, takes the $5, and he's all, Paul Stanley plays for $5. And, like, puts it into his waistband and then continues playing. It was really laid back.
He did good for a small, intimate crowd.
And so, there's this moment at the beginning of the show, and he's out there looking. One of those things only Paul can do. He's in a pink silk shirt, just being a big Cher-looking bastard, like he always is. Being, as they used to call him in Kiss, you know, it was Uncle Gene and Aunt Paul.
Yeah.
And a woman throws a piece of paper on stage.
And so Paul Stanley, like, reaches down. It was on Saturday Night Live, and he picks up a piece of paper, and it's a poem that she has written. And he reads it, and he's being bathed in, like, purple lights from above, and he reads, and it's the worst poem. And I can't, there are sections we can't say on the air.
It was awful.
She did, and it was, like, the worst Moon, June, Spoon, you know. Like,
there's some in and out.
And it was, and then at one point she says, how do I put this? In this really bad, ham-fisted rhyming that the woman was doing in this poem, she did at one point refer to, how do I say this? She referred to Paul's effect on one of her areas. She referred to Paul's, the effect that his, that her love, Paul has an effect on an area of her.
Not unlike a rainy day, might be kind of...
Like an elbow?
Yes, exactly. Exactly, an elbow. And he has a very apparently quantifiable effect on her elbow.
Oh.
Elbow. And she rhymed it with...
Elbow?
It rhymed with, you make my head... Here's what it rhymed with, and I will not say anything else on this. She was talking about Paul's effect on her elbow, and the description of Paul's effect on her elbow rhymed with, you make my head dream...
Oh.
There you go. That's all I'm going to say.
Nice.
But then the best part was this, and he's reading this on stage. I'm glad that your kid was there for that.
Yeah, intently listening.
Where you're like, look over there! Bright, shiny object! And then he's reading the poem, and he's reading in his poem, of course, so he's like, the woman has given him this poem. He's, I hope someday we will wed. Until then, tears will shed. It's so bad. It's the worst. It's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. He was really great, though. At one point... I don't know if you were there. He was doing this sort of, this song called I Still Love You. And he was doing this thing where he does that, you know, whoa, whoa, you know, that black thing that he does. Were you there when he said, Nate Morton, the drummer from the house band there.
Yeah, I was there.
Nate Morton is a black man. And Paul Stanley introduced him as my twin brother. Because Paul is so much into that, like, Mick Jagger, I'm chocolate on the inside vibe. Paul Stanley also said this. I made a note to myself. He said
something about...
I learned the language of the ghetto because I am a brother, said Paul Stanley.
Oh, my God.
There's not much ghetto in
it. But he's doing this whole whoa, whoa thing, and all of a sudden you heard a woman in the front row sing it back to him, like in a real soulful, like Christina Aguilera voice. And he just, like, full on hands her the microphone. And then they just sing back and forth to each other for a while. But it was really great. But every time I turned around, there was somebody there that I knew. It was like, you were there, Storm, and you were there. Annie M., you were there?
There was a lot of old folks from my past that came crawling out of the woodwork.
Were you there when the guy got the beat down on him from the security? No, you weren't because you left. Okay, and then I'll... No, I'm just with it. I know I'm not even letting you... came in the studio, I'm not even letting you talk, but I get the one
That's
quick
fine.
Story, and then I'll ask you for, I don't know, exciting gossip. And then we'll talk about the...
Oval break and then we'll ask him.
Yeah. Did you really just...
You should see the instant messages this guy sends me about breastfeeding.
Sweet, sweet mama sauce.
Oh, it burns.
That's what I'm talking about.
I need the mental bleed.
It keeps you on your toes, Tara.
On your elbows.
On your elbows.
Yeah.
Keeps your elbows dry.
Oh my God.
Keeps your elbows dry. Jesus.
Oh.
All right.
Things that come out of Davey's mouth.
And into, apparently.
Bada bing.
Today I'm not Davey. I am juror 0042.
Oh, you're on jury duty.
Yes.
Hang him. I'll give you $1 to vote guilty. I don't even care who it is.
They already booted me out of one.
Oh.
She's
like, bring that bastard in here.
Dashing good looks.
All right.
Here's too distracting.
It's a quick story. Here's a quick story about Paul Stanley, though.
Let's talk more about Paul Stanley.
No, after the show, I'm standing outside with Brian Blair from the Oregon Music Guide, and I feel something jostling against me, and I'm just like, well, whatever, you know, because people are leaving. And we're like, well, you know, so what do you think of the show? And I hear the jostling, and I'm like, what the hell? And I turn around. There's a guy. Do you ever do this? And I know you do. When you're at a show, and you look around, and you see the people at the rock show with you, and you're like, it shames me that I am in the same demographic as some of these people. Like, I know, Sarah, that must happen to you.
Yeah, when I go to, like, little punk rock shows and there are 16-year-olds around me, I'm like, what is wrong with
them? And they're just
music?
Idiots. Yeah. And you're like, oh, God, and here I am, too. Guy, long, bleached mullet, balding, of course. He's got the KGON hairstyle. Balding, long-ass mullet, shirt, button-down shirt, open.
Yes.
Huge beer gut. Massive beer gut. Doughy. And he's on the ground fighting it out with the security guard. And the security guard is putting him in a hammer lock and just screaming
Over what?
Just the guy was just being an ass. He was just drunk looking for a fight. And the security guard, to his credit, is not punching him. The security guard is just putting him on the ground and restraining him and got him in a hammer lock. And the security guard was being pretty cool. The security guard is like, look, I'm going to let you up, walk away, or I'm going to call the cops. And like 2-3 times, the security guard would get the guy down. The guy quits moving. Security guard would let him go. The guy would get up, wait like half a second, and like lunge back at the security guard. And finally, then it's 2 security guards. Then it's 3 security guards. They've got the guy in the guard. At one point, the guy bites it into a parking meter. Huge gash on his forehead. Now he's bleeding. It looks all WWF and whatnot. The security guards are like doing their best to just get rid of the guy. They're like, walk away, dude. They're like, go home. We're going to call the cops. And they keep shoving him down the sidewalk and saying, like, keep walking. And the guy would stop for a second and like leap back. And then the guy starts coupling it with insults. And this is the guy, drunk guy, yelling at the security guards. This is his insult. He goes, yeah, your mother doesn't even love you. And you look like Shrek. And then he belches. And then he lunges at the guy again. Meanwhile, in true Bill Hicks fashion, meanwhile, off to the side, there's the wife. Stringy hair, bad teeth, huge Kiss shirt, big saggy bosoms. He's a good man. Leave him alone. And you're just, and yet we couldn't stop watching. We couldn't. It's like I'm cringing now even telling the story. We couldn't quit watching. Then the cops roll up. The cops roll up, and there's about 50 of us outside watching this. And we're like, I'm going to see some violence now. And then the guy, what does he do? Immediately lunges at the cops. And you don't lunge at cops. And then the cops are putting him down on the pavement. The wife is screaming, he's a good man. He's the father of my life. Leave him alone. Just, and then the cops are like working the guy. And then this guy, Brian Blair, and I, we get the whole crowd going in a chant of taser, taser. And I was hoping that they would do it. So we had like 30 people chanting for them to use the taser. And then they never did. And they put him against it, and they start rifling through his pockets. Out comes all the baggies. Baggies full of drugs.
Nice.
And then, so the cops, and the idiots never learn, like, that's swimming upstream. You know what I mean? You're never, that's bailing out the ocean with a spoon. You're never going
to
win that.
I'm willing to bet that that guy probably did that 10 years ago at a Kiss concert.
Oh, totally, totally. And there's like 5 cop cars. They finally put him in the back, drive off, wife on the side. He's a good man! You know, just there. Turns out they both came from San Francisco just to see that show. Ouch. So they are screwed in like 5 different ways. It was the show after the show. It was really, really good.
Those are your peeps, Rick.
Those are my people right there. That's when some Brian and I are like, you know, we're like, that guy's here. We're here. Yeah. So there you go. There, but for the grace of like learning how to read, go I. Do we have to break?
Mm-hmm.
So behind. You stick around for a view?
Yeah.
Find out what's going on in the world of Storm the Balls?
I would love to.
Fantastic. All right. And then Tim Riley will rejoin us for the Ministry of Truth. Oh, I got this Britney story to get to. Do you know the second sex tape I'm talking about? If you do, don't say it. But just
I might.
Britney's?
No. There's one of Britney and one of someone else. Yeah. The best part is how you indicated that it was her. Yes, that is who I'm talking about. Fantastic. Her elbow.
Yeah.
Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.